Good afternoon, Juno, and welcome to our weekly show, Conversations with the Black Awareness Association. I'm Sherry Patterson, president of the association, and I am your host this afternoon, along with Kay Smith. This week, we are honored to have with us attorney Lori Colbert of Colbert Family Law, LLC, Anchorage, Alaska. Lori just stepped into a new adventure, and we thought it was an opportune time to have her on the show and to share about it and more. Lori and I have known each other for about 40 years or more, so we just dated ourselves. So, hello, Lori. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sherry. I'm glad that you guys thought of me to include me in this conversation. And I'm happy to be here.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. We know there are many things going on in the world today, and we're going to get probably into some of that. And to help us navigate the conversation this afternoon, we're going to let Kay go ahead and do your thing. Kay?
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction, Sherry. And welcome, Lori. We so value your presence and appreciate your generosity. Let's jump right into our questions to tell our community, our listeners, more about you. And would you tell us a little about yourself? Everyone wants to know things like how long have you been in Alaska and what brought you to Alaska? Please tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm actually was born here in Anchorage a long time ago. My parents met here in Anchorage. And so I was born and raised here, graduated from high school in Anchorage, and then went off to college and law school and came back home to practice law.
Wonderful. Thank you. I read in your bio a little bit, you went to Willamette University?
It's Willamette University College of Law, yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, I went to Willamette University College of Law in Salem, Oregon for law school. And I went to Claremont McKenna College in Claremont, California for undergraduate.
Wonderful. So what circumstances led you in the direction of working in the justice system? In other words, why a law career? Why were you interested in the law as a child, as a teen? Were there memorable instances along the way that led you in this direction?
That's a really interesting question, and I thought about that a lot. I probably decided that I wanted to be a lawyer when I was in high school. I thought my mom was a teacher, and so at first I said I thought I wanted to be a teacher, but my mom was one of those people that worked really hard for her kids, and she would have me and my father at every program helping her and doing her bulletin boards, and I played the piano at her Mother's Day program. So I decided that teachers worked really hard, and maybe that wasn't for me. So I decided that I wanted to do something else. And so I started off wanting to do corporate law, and I found that economics and my mind were not the best of fits. And so I just decided that I really, really wanted to help people. And so that's how I ended up in family law. Wow. But I went to college knowing that I wanted to go to law school.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Awesome. That's such a motivation for, you know, young boys and girls who are listening to our program or whose parents will tell them about our program. Yeah, we definitely need to see people who are doing things out of the norm, out of the, So where did you study law? We talked about that before, but yes. Tell us some of the unique benefits from this experience you had when you, as you, you know, focused on your preparation for this field. Share with us some
I think that I left college, and both of my parents had retired from their careers, and I had went to a small, private, very expensive liberal arts college, and so I was looking at ways that I could be able to finance law school, and unbeknownst to me, Willamette had a special program that they set aside 2 tuition waivers per year for minority students. They didn't tell you about it before you applied, but after you applied and were accepted into the school, Then they let you know that you got this tuition waiver, and then you had to maintain a certain GPA. So basically, my tuition for law school was paid for 3 years, and that was just amazing. You know, like I said, my parents had both retired, and I often tell the story that my last year of college, my parents paid more per month to my college than they paid for the mortgage on their house. And wow. So, and that was even with the Alaska student loan. So I needed to find something that wasn't going to be that big of a burden financially and still a very good school. And so the Lemon has been around for over 100 years. It has a good reputation in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. So it was a good fit for me.
Wonderful. Yes, that's definitely motivation for those young scholars who are wanting to have this opportunity. You know, that burden of college debt is weighing heavily, especially on our young people nowadays. So to know that there are corners and there are avenues where you can, you know, have this advantage. Just persistence, right? Persistence and asking persistence. The right question, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Awesome. Okay, tell us about your career as a Black attorney, a woman serving in Alaska.
I can start off by saying there's not very many of us. We recently sought to gather up the Black female attorneys in Alaska. And so there's a group of us now that are meeting on a semi-regular basis, and there's about 10 to 15 of us, which is quite amazing. And we are literally all over the state of Alaska in all different capacities, be it a judge, legal counsel for a village corporation, partners in law firms, working with Native corporations. I mean, we're just all over the place. And so I think that's very, very cool. So we do have two Black women judges, which, you know, is something that 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that.
Right.
Because we didn't have it. And so I've had my career. Often I'm the only Black person in the courtroom. I still tend to be the one that, how do I say this? You know, I do litigation because I do family law, so I'm in court a lot. So the judges know me. And I made my reputation by doing the right thing and trying to do the best that I can do. I think that reputation stands whether I'm a white woman, a Black woman, whatever. I want that reputation of being a good attorney. I don't think in particular that my color has stopped me in any way in my career. But I still am a Black woman in a state where there's very few colored, and I hate to use that word, but people of color. So there have been opportunities. There have been occasions where I've been stopped by the security at the courthouse because there's an attorney's entrance. And they're like, are you an attorney? And I'm like, well, did you ask that white man that was right in front of me, was he an attorney? And, you know, they get flustered because they don't know what to say. What makes me any different from that person that's in front of me or behind me for that matter?
Yeah.
So, you know, we still have those occasions where the people are, you know, well, are you the client? No, I'm not the client. I'm the attorney.
Wow.
It's partially, it's where we live. We're in Alaska. There's not a lot of us, even though we have minorities on the bench. We still don't see a lot of people in the courtroom.
Wow. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Thanks for sharing that because, you know, individuals sometimes might say, oh, we're progressed so much, you know, this doesn't happen, that doesn't happen. But to hear from someone who's living this life now and to know that, you know, we still have these instances, these events occurring. So thanks for sharing that. Thanks for being real with that. The other thing that we wonder about, you mentioned briefly about Black professionals and your small group of fellow colleagues serving in the legal system here in Alaska. Would you comment some on your partnerships, your roles as you partner, if there's such partnership sometimes?
Well, there's not necessarily a partnership just because people do different things. You know, I'm like I said, I'm a litigator, so I'm in an adversarial position where, you know, I'm going against somebody else. We just try to find that collegial and that civility so that we can work with everybody. So I haven't had the opportunity to necessarily partner with other people in that frame that I think that you're asking for, because you have a lot of people that are in corporate work, you know, or in firms that are doing, you know, acquisitions or medical malpractice, or like I said, they're judges. So it's not, for me, I haven't had that opportunity to necessarily collaborate, except to get together and for us to share our stories with each other, because that's, I think, very important.
And that's rich. That's rich mm-hmm. and motivational. Mm-hmm. That is rich. Nothing can replace that time of getting together. We would love to hear your perspectives on each of these following topics. We have a few of them. Firstly, regarding Brown versus Board of Education, and for that matter, any other significant ruling that you feel has changed history for Black students that you'd like to comment on. Yeah, Brown versus Board of Education. Some thoughts, your perspectives?
Well,
in the little time that we have.
You know, Brown versus Education was the case that decided that separate was not equal, okay? But it didn't. So, in theory, the goal of the decision was to segregate the schools. And I think there's a line, I haven't read the ruling in a since probably law school, which is a long time ago. but I think they said to do it with haste. But what a lot of people don't realize is that there were a whole line of cases after Brown versus the Board of Education, and it took years to make that happen, to actually, you know, get the intent of that ruling in place. I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so I think it was significant in that it started the ball rolling to what the Supreme Court wanted to do, which was put us in a situation where we were having, you know, we were in an equal place as the white people were. I think that the reality, though, is that if we look at cities across the United States, even though schools aren't quote unquote segregated, you still have segregation. An example that I can kind of relate to is when I went to college, I went to school in Southern California, and there were kids from inner city LA schools. And most of those schools were all minority students. Mm-hmm. And there was a program that my college did to help prepare certain students for the college education they were about to receive, okay? The kids that came from the inner city LA schools, they were in that program. I wasn't in that program because I came from Alaska School District. So, you know, even though I might not have had the GPA, you know, some of those kids came from 4.0, but they came from an inner city school that maybe put them, that the school was recognizing that maybe they weren't getting the same level of education that everybody else was getting. So even though that ruling was put in place, I think we still have goals to achieve.
Most definitely. Most definitely. The work is never done.
The work is never done.
Wonderful. Now, next item that we'd like you to comment on is a person, Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall was the court's first Black American justice. Okay, he was an American lawyer, a civil rights activist. He served as an associate justice of the Supreme Court of the United States from October 1967 through October 1991. He won a variety of cases and struck down many, many forms of legalized racism, helping to inspire the American civil rights movement. Another of his landmark cases, one includes Brown versus Board of Education. And I think that in terms nowadays, the young people would call him greatest of all time, right? A GOAT. Yeah. And yes. So, yeah, what are your thoughts? What perspectives can you share concerning the legacy of Thurgood Marshall?
He's definitely a legal inspiration to me. When you, and I don't know if people really think about it in this way, I had the opportunity to go to the National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, and it's actually it's the Lorraine Hotel where Dr. King is killed, and they talk about the history of civil rights from the beginning of our nation, and civil rights, you know, the way that civil rights change are through legal cases. And when you think about the impact that Thurgood Marshall had on all those cases that he took one by one to the Supreme Court, it's just amazing to me. He did what I wanted to when I grew up. You know, I always joke around and say that my second career is going to be to go to D.C. and do civil rights law or working for the Legal Defense Fund, the Children's Defense Fund, something that's, you know, we're truly helping people that aren't able to help themselves. And that's what he did. He helped us get to places that we would not have been able to do without him going into a courtroom and writing those briefs and making those arguments so that we could come to another place.
Wonderful.
Thank you, ladies. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. I'm really enjoying this conversation, and we'll be right back. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Again, this is Sherry Patterson with the Black Awareness Association, and we're here with Kay Smith, who is navigating a conversation with attorney Lori Colbert from Colbert Family Law, LLC in Anchorage, Alaska, who is our guest, and I'm just going to let them go at it again. Ladies?
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sherry. Lori, would you kind of go into a little more detail on the Brown versus Board of Education for our listeners who may not be familiar with that case, that landmark case?
Sure. I'll go with what I remember and know. Brown represented Linda Brown, and she was a third grader at the time in Topeka, Kansas, and she wanted to enroll in summer school, and she was not able to because she was Black. And so her parents took it up with the Board of Education, and the case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And it changed, what it did is it changed our previous case that was from the 1800s. I want to say it was like 1896. And the case was Plessy v. Ferguson. And in Plessy v. Ferguson, they ruled that separate and could be equal. And it was a fight against people riding on the railroad. But that case had stood all the way from 1954 to the Supreme Court did Brown versus Board of Education.
Wonderful, wonderful, because we have some young listeners and who might not be familiar with that case. Thank you for sharing. The other person that I'd like to have you share some perspectives on is Ruth Bader Ginsburg, also called RBG, or recently I've heard the notorious RBG, and rightfully so, she's being remembered. She was a civil rights icon, an American jurist. For women who have their own credit card now and have been able to purchase a home on their own, who have voting rights, who has someone on their side concerning gender-based discrimination, Equal Rights Amendment, we thank the great RBG. She is the second woman to serve on the Supreme Court from 1993 until her death. Would you share some perspectives on the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
She, too, is an inspiration. She used her voice and her ability as a lawyer and as a judge and a justice to see that women obtained some equal rights that we did not have before. She was so smart. I mean, her intelligence level was just amazing. And she was able to voice things in a way to make it plainly understood where she was coming from. And she did that out of, again, her own circumstances where she had been turned away from places and not being able to get into places, even though she had the education and the credentials that she was able to do, much like her predecessor on the bench, on the court, Sandra Day O'Connor. I think Sandra Day O'Connor also had her first job, I think, was as a legal secretary, even though she had a law degree. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that that's what happened with Sandra Day O'Connor. And with Justice Ginsburg, she started teaching because she couldn't get the jobs that she wanted because she was a woman. And so I think that, you know, that we all women have something to thank her for. And, you know, when you think about her mind and the fact that she worked as hard as she did, being as sick as she was, and up in her years, still, she was able to do all of those brilliant things. I think it's just amazing. And I think we all have to take a hat off to her and just thank her for her service.
Yes, yes. Another amazing, greatest of all times, a GOAT.
Yes.
Awesome, yes. So on our next question, what are some of your strategies for living and or dealing with the current racial climate that we're now faced with in our country? For, you know, what we're hearing mostly is becoming more familiar with the fact that the Black family has to actually prepare young children, their children, to interact and to integrate in the public, especially, you know, with law enforcement or people in power positions. And so boys in particular, might I add. So, would you share some of your strategies for living and or dealing with the current racial climate in our country?
It's hard. It's really, really hard. I have two young grandsons, and they are 6 and 7. The oldest one is on the autism spectrum, and he's really high functioning, but I especially worry about him. You shouldn't have to prepare your children for their encounter with the police. I think one of the hardest things is that other people, non-Black people, don't understand that even though it's not affecting us personally, it's affecting us. And I think that's probably the hardest thing, that, you know, when you see George Floyd on the ground, that's affecting, that affects me just like it was my son or my brother or my father or whatever. And I don't think the other cultures around us recognize that. And so when you think about where we're at, you know, today in this country, you know, right now Kentucky is on high alert as they prepare to give the grand jury findings from Breonna Taylor. Now, why they need a grand jury finding, that's neither here nor there. I don't do criminal law, but somebody needs to be in jail, is what I say. I think that we have to check on each other to make sure that we are doing okay. Because I think mentally and emotionally, it's very draining what we're seeing every day. And so I think that we have to support each other. We have to talk about it. We have to talk it out. And we have to get comfortable having uncomfortable conversations with other people about this.
Yes.
Because we've, for 400 years, we've allowed people to be comfortable. We take on the load. And so now it's time to have those uncomfortable conversations. And it's hard for us to have those. It's really uncomfortable for them, but it's hard. It's just as hard for us to have those conversations about what we've experienced and how George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Aubrey Ahmad, how those people, how that has affected us. And I worry about my little boys. I worry about, you know, they speak their mind, and, you know, I don't want them speaking their mind, getting them in trouble. But, you know, at the same time, I want them educated. I want them to know what their rights are. I want them to speak up for themselves. But I don't want them, in doing that, to get themselves killed because they do that.
Right, right.
And it's sad that we have to worry about that.
Right. Ladies, can I jump in here? I recently spoke at a local meeting, and I was asked to several months ago, but I was in no emotional condition to do so. And so I needed till September to be on the path to healing so that I could. And I'm glad that I did. As a response, I had an email waiting for me the next morning from someone that was in the meeting. And she said, "Sherry, I had no idea." She said, "I don't know where I've been, but I had no idea that your people have lived and have been treated as this for so many years." And she said some other things. And so I'm finding in this climate or this process that we're in, yes, it's very emotional, it's very draining. And this one hit us like a ton of bricks. As I described it, is as if the pot has been boiling for 400 years and it just overflowed this time. And we're just like, oh no, this can't continue. No, this is 2020. This can't be happening again. And the fact is, it is. And so I'm with you. I hear exactly what you say. I have grandbabies also. I have an adult male. As a son, I have brothers. I have friends who, you know, we worry about. And it's a very, very trying time for us. And I even said in that meeting for one of the things, you know, many have asked, what can they do in this process? And one of the things I pointed out was, check on your Black friends. check on your Black friends. We are hurting right now. We're grieving right now. We need you to reach out to us. Don't be afraid to reach out to us. And no, you may not know what to say, but just you reaching out and saying, "I'm here, I don't know what to say," does us a world of good. Yeah. So I hear you. I absolutely hear you. On that note, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We are back from our break, and you are here with Sherry Patterson of the Black Awareness Association on our weekly show. And Kay Smith is got in our conversation today with attorney Lori Colbert of Colbert Family Law, LLC, in Anchorage, Alaska. And I will just let these ladies go for it again. I'm really enjoying this.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sherry. Thank you again, Attorney Colbert, for spending this time with us. This is so, so appreciated. And your gratitude and kindness for you, and your patience, notwithstanding, for just being with us. We so appreciate it. And well, you're part of us now. We love you forever. Thank you so much. We'd like to learn a little bit more about your practice there in Anchorage. And so tell us about your firm. Tell us about your practice areas, your vision, your accomplishments. Tell us what or whom prompted you to move your business in this direction. And yes, just go for it. Talk to us.
All right. Well, I started off as an associate, and I'm going to date myself too, 25 years ago with the law firm of Mendel & Huntington. That morphed into Mendel & Associates, and that morphed again into Mendel Colbert & Associates. So the Mendel in all of that was Allison Mendel, who was a well-known attorney for her civil rights activism in a lot of areas, but primarily the LGBTQ area. And she was one of the lawyers that brought same-sex marriage to Alaska. So I worked with her until she retired. And so she retired and left us. And during that whole time, I've done nothing but family law. So upon her retirement, we decided to dissolve the firm. And the two partners that were left, we decided to do our own solo practice. My firm solely focuses on family law. So my tagline is in good times and in bad. The tagline is that because my first love, more than anything, the thing that I love to do most of all is adoptions. Mm. I love to do family creation. And so adoptions, I actually have a wall that has pictures from my babies that have been adopted through my help, or my babies and kids that have been adopted through my assistance. I just love seeing those families formed and seeing all the love that comes from adoptions. I also do, along with adoptions, the family formation, I do surrogacy contracts. I help connect, well, don't connect, but I help write surrogacy contracts for those people that are willing. And I say willing, but it's a great gift for a woman to be willing to carry somebody else's baby. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts of all, along with adoption, those mothers that are willing to provide what they feel is a better home for their child. And so those are the things that I love to do. So those are the good times, and I love to do those things. I also do the other stuff. So when the family is falling apart, whether it be divorce, custody, child support, domestic violence, I help in all those situations. Those aren't fun. People are very stressed. They're very emotional. You are dealing with people at one of the highest stress points in their life. I think that going through a divorce is like one of the top three stressors that an adult can go through. And so I try to provide calm, compassionate, and expert legal advice to them. I'm not the attorney that's going to do whatever the client wants to do, because that's not what you hired me for. You hired me for my expertise and my experience. And so I'm going to give you, you know, what I think that you need to know, what's best for your kids, what's the best thing that's going to advance your goals for your family. So that's what I want to focus on. And so in doing that, I also am trained in mediation, so I can also help mediate and resolve people's disagreements that way. I'm also trained as a collaborative professional. And so I'm a member of the Alaska Association of Collaborative Professionals. And what that is a group of people that are trained in the collaborative process. And so what we do is we kind of take off our adversarial hats and we work together as a group. So me and my client, the other party, and their attorney, and we have some neutral professionals that work with us, and we come together at a table and we work out, you know, we look at what are the big goals for this family, because even though they're splitting up, they're still a family and they still have goals that they have kids to raise. And so we're looking at what are the road marks that we can do to get this family to reach their goals. And I love that process, because our motto is divorce with dignity, because it's very respectful. You know, everybody has a hand in what they're doing, and it's a much more efficient and positive way to separate your family. So those are some of the things that I do. Just a little bit more about me professionally. I'm active with the Alaska Bar Association. I spent about 8 years as co-chair of the Family Law section. And so there I helped coordinate our monthly section meetings and help organize continuing legal education courses. I'm also involved with the American Bar Association Family Law Section, and I've been on their governing council, been on the CLE committee for that, worked on several committees within that area. And right now, my biggest thing with the American Bar is I'm the state representative to the House of Delegates. And so what that is the American Bar Association is the largest group in the country of attorneys. And so they have what they call a House of Delegates, and think of it like Congress, essentially. And every state has a representative that gets, we go and we're part of the nominating committee and we get to vote on certain things. But the House of Delegates is the policy-making body of the American Bar Association. So when the American Bar Association president comes out and speaks out on whether or not, comes out and speaks about the Supreme Court nominee, that might be something that we've taken up in the House. Now, we haven't taken that up in the House because we haven't had a meeting to take that up in the House in that respect. Another example is issues that have happened with immigration. When the American Bar Association comes out and makes policy comments, those are things that have come out of the House of Delegates. And so I really love being part of that body. It's over 500 attorneys that are a part of that body. And I just love being a part of that policy making for attorneys around the world, are mainly in the country, but we have offshoots around the world. When we talk about our professional rules, those are modeled from things that we get from the American Bar Association. So again, we have a hand in that. And so that's one of the big things I do professionally. And let's see, what else do I do? Those are probably the main things that I do professionally. And yeah, I think the last thing is just, who I am. I try to be caring, compassionate. I try to hear what my clients have to say. And I try to steer them in the right direction and make legal arguments for them that are gonna win the day, but also have merit in them. So I'm not gonna be one that's gonna make a meritless argument. I often tell my clients, if I can make, I'm not gonna make an argument that I can't make without a straight face. So that's my goal. I try to hone my skills so that I'm a good lawyer, because whatever I do, I want to be good at it. And so that's always my goal.
Awesome.
A true civil servant. Thank you so much, Attorney Lori Culpert. And for anyone who wants to connect with your agency and to have a more one-on-one with you, they can look you up, Lori Culpert Legal Services there in Anchorage. Thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule to spend some time with us and to illuminate us on the issues facing us in the civil justice area during these trying times, these tumultuous times. And thanks for your times and your moments of reassurance as well. Very helpful to us. And we are very grateful, one more time, very grateful for your kindness, for spending time with us. Thank you so much, Attorney Lori Culpert.
Thank you. Thank you, Kay and Lori. We have enjoyed the conversation. Juno, thank you for joining us. And as we leave today, I came across a quote from, of course, Dr. King. And it says, change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but it comes through continuous and constant struggle. So keep pushing, keep dreaming, and things will change. It may not change right away, but it will eventually change. Keep dreaming and dream big. Change will come. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.